सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ वक्रतुण्डमहाकाय सूर्यकोटिसमप्रभा निर्विघ्नं कुरु मे देवा सर्वकार्येषु सर्वदा सरस्वती नमस्तुभ्यं वरदे कामरूपिणी विद्यारम्भं करिष्यामि सिद्धिर्भवतु मे सदा समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयम् नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम् गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णुः गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरुसाक्षात् परं ब्रह्म तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् परमानन्दमाधवम् सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्परां श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करं लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः हरि ओम् सो फ्रम् टुडे आन्वर्ड्स् वी विल् बि सीयिङ्ग् दिस् विवेक चुडामणि श्री आदिशङ्कराचार्यजी. And before we begin study, I know everyone here, we've been studying various texts already. But it is customary, it is our tradition, that before we enter into the text, first we should engage in a little bit of praise or eulogizing of the knowledge and the author. So first is knowledge. Now, why do we learn? As human beings, we are in a very unique position. We are fortunate to have this intellect, which affords us this capacity to know. And more importantly, the knowing, or a little bit more than knowing, is to understand. And as many of us may have already, we are all aware of, knowledge is the cornerstone of the human being. It is what defines us and puts us in a very lofty position amongst all other jantus, all other beings. And as a civilization, we are always in the process of improvement. Today, technology has actually brought us full circle to that Puranic literature. In the Puranas, when we read, you know, these fantastical stories about in Ramayana and Mahabharata, how one person is all the way in Lanka and another is all the way in Ayodhya. How people can communicate from one realm to the next, the devatas, etc. How they can sit in a chariot and magically go from one location to the next in a matter of hours. At one point in time, this felt like such an unbelievable thing. Yet here we are, very much experiencing all that the Puranas have been experiencing then. Because the Puranas tell us about Sambhava, the possibilities. The problem is the human being finds it difficult to understand possibilities or to accept certain possibilities when it goes beyond our realm of experience. We have limited ourselves to accepting only that which is within my realm of experience. And so when we read Mahabharata, even to today, there are many people who think it's so fantastical. Many people say it's mythology. But yet still, we find ourselves communicating with people far, far away from us, across distance. We find ourselves being able to travel great distances in a matter of hours across far spread locations. So technology has brought us full circle. Yet, with all of our technology, all of our comforts, still we find we are not happy. Still we find we are not content. Still we find that we are seeking to know or to find the source of that happiness. And why should such intelligent, advanced beings seek to analyze the root source of happiness? Why is it that we have such knowledge? Why is it that we have such technology available to us at our fingertips, and yet still, it is not enough? And so, the Vedas have provided the absolute source for us, except for most of us, most of the time, most of us meaning not just in this setting, most of us meaning in a very general sense, the human race itself. We have not sought the answers from the Vedas. Instead of seeking the truth, instead of seeking the very source itself, going to the source itself, instead, we try to find it in the world. And then in the world, we find it is not enough. The world is not perfect. The world is not without blemishes. The world is not without faults. And anything that we have found in this world, however temporary that enjoyment might be, it is still always temporary. And therefore, for the one who has had enough, for that seeker who has found, I have had enough of temporariness. I have had enough of limitations. For such a seeker, at some point, they turn towards spirituality. And fortunately for us, because we have been turned against spirituality till the point where I have found that the world is not enough for my happiness. Though we have been turned against it, spirituality in particular, Ishvara, has not been turned against us. And so the minute we turn to that Ishvara, the minute we seek that knowledge, the minute we seek that comfort that only the Lord can give, Bhagwan is there once we seek. And so what is there for the seeker? First is that seeker must overcome certain defaults. Four defects are there of the human being that applies to all of us. None of us are perfect. We are in fact subject to these defects. And what are they? The first defect is we have a tendency to commit mistakes. Isn't it so? Every single human being in this world makes mistakes without exception. To err is human, and therefore we must accept that no matter how seemingly perfect a person might appear, especially however perfect I might deem myself, we are all liable to make mistakes. And why do we make mistakes? Because of the second defect, which is what we are all subject to illusion. This world is by its very nature an illusion. That's a sight. In this material world also, there are illusions all around us, not just at the spiritual level, the very day-to-day material level. And regularly we fall for them. In the Bhagavatam, even the devatas fall for the leelas of the Lord. Indradev falls for Bhagwan's many illusions and tricks. Our entire socio-economic system is built on illusion. One nice giant Ponzi scheme. All advertising that we see, billboards and ads that pop up on our screens, is just a fancy name for trickery. That's all. Leela in the language of the Puranas. And we even have a commonly accepted saying. What do we say? The grass is always greener on the other side. Why? Because standing from our side, we are not content, and we look at the other side and it looks greener. It looks perfect. It looks like Eden, but it is not. It's all an illusion of this world. And we fall for it all of the time. The sky is blue. It's not blue. The mirage in the desert, or the mirage on the highway, you're traveling down on a road, very hot summer day, 111 degrees, and the sun coming down, bearing down upon that pitch road, that tar. And it looks as though there's water up ahead. You get there and you find there is nothing. All an illusion. The second defect of the human being is we have a propensity to cheat. That doesn't mean we're all cheaters. It just means when I have a desire to obtain something, if I have a very strong desire for that thing, then I am willing to do what I can, do what I must in order to get it. Whatever it is, it might be a tangible object or something intangible. People cheat for material possessions as well as for some type of status, fame, glory. In business, cheating is just part of the game. It's commonplace. It's so commonplace that with many things we don't accept as cheating. We don't even consider it to be cheating. But it is if we pay attention. And the fourth is the fourth defect. We are all subject to our imperfect senses. These sense organs that we have, as necessary as they are also entirely undependable. We cannot rely on them for 100% accurate information. Something can be right in front of our eyes, yet we do not see it. In Vedanta, we have the very common example of snake and rope. It's all well and good if you mistake a rope for a snake, but if you mistake a snake for a rope, you'll be in some big trouble. It happens all the time. Many people think, oh, snake and rope, who's going to miss, what's the big deal? But we do it in life constantly. See, we mistake what's right in front of us and we think it to be real. Like the mirage, like the snake and rope. All of these examples we will see. So then, what is that benchmark that I can use to measure myself, to determine if we are saying there are these imperfections, these defects are there, and I am striving for something greater than that. I am striving to rid myself of all sources of sorrow and to attain complete joy. How then do I gain that? By what measure can I, may I be able to shape my life so that I can rid myself of all of these imperfections? That thing is called as the Shastra. The authority of the Shastra is absolute, and without it, we will find ourselves continuously being caught by this alligator or crocodile in the form of samsara. The Shastra alone has, it is a deep, timeless and devoid of any other faults, devoid of the faults that we are prone to. And to understand and accept the significance of the Vedic literature of the Shastra is to know that it is in fact the only authority to know the absolute truth, which is what? That knowledge of Brahman. It is from the Vedas, the eternal breath of Ishvara itself, that this knowledge, and in fact, all knowledge comes from. That knowledge then passes through the intellects of each jiva. And colored by our own individual experiences and interaction with this empirical world, then it becomes distorted and highly subjective. So, first, what are the shastras? Again, I am sure most, if not all of us, are very familiar, but indulge me for a minute, and for the sake of review, we will see. And the hierarchy first is the Shruti, the Vedas, the very breath of Ishvara himself. Meaning what? When we say the breath of Ishvara, what we mean is just as the universe is manifested in the forms and ways that it is, as per the requirements of that yuga, at the same time, the manual for that universe is also manifested. So just as Ishvara brings forth this manifested world, this manifested universe, together with that, the manual is provided. And this manual is in the form of the Vedas, the Shruti. Why is it perfect? Because it is apaurusheya. It is not composed of, it is not the product of any human hand or any limited mind. It is of Ishvara's own design. And various ways are there for us to see how the Vedas are timeless. It maintains its krama, for example. Krama means its order. It maintains a set order. See, when we chant Purusha Suktam, why Vedic chanting is so important? The Suktams of the Vedas have the swaras are there. The swaras are very important. We should not think, oh, what's the big deal? Swaras allow us to understand the meaning. Based on the placement of the swaras, the rishis are able to determine what the particular meaning is. Incorrectly pronounced, and the meaning changes. Just as if I incorrectly pronounce a word, the meaning changes. In the same way, the swara also helps to give meaning to that word or phrase or suktam. So the Vedas, the Shruti, these words are interchangeable. Shruti means heard, having heard. Who heard? The rishis heard. How have they heard? By paying attention. Then, having heard the knowledge of the Vedas, the Shruti, these rishis reflect upon it, reflecting upon it, and then give it in a way that can be understood by others, call as smriti. Otherwise, learning Vedas is very tough because the Vedas themselves are not given in a very in a way that can be easily digested by our minds. We can try, but it is very difficult. And so when the rishis study, they are able to put the same teaching in a format that might be more accessible to us, might be more understandable for us. This is called a smriti. Then, rishis also tell about various aspects of society. See, I am only experiencing this yuga, this loka, at this particular time. So that experience is so limited. I cannot, it is difficult for me to conceptualize something beyond what I know. So, in the same way, when we study, when we read the stories and the happenings of the Mahabharata, for example, and it seems as though to be so unrealistic, but it is unrealistic compared to what? Compared only to my limited understanding. If you visit, for example, the islands of Andaman and Nicobar, it's a good way to realize how our understanding of the world is highly contextual. Based on the society that I am born into, the cultures that I have been exposed to, that is how I have determined the world. And outside of that, how even within the known world that I am presently living in, if I have not been exposed beyond my own experiences, then it is difficult for me to conceive or to understand others' experiences. So you go to Andaman and Nicobar. If you are brave enough, then what will happen? Well, if you manage to survive and land on the island, you will not last much longer than that. Because here is a group of people who have not experienced anything outside of that life, living in what we deem as primitive, but for them, this is the way life is. They will kill any stranger who comes and then they'll eat you. This is their experience. And we call it primitive. They call us primitive. They will see us as intruders. So experience and knowledge of the world, the soul is limited. And therefore, it's easy for us to see the Puranas and Itihasas and all of these things as something mythological. But it is not mythology, it is just ancient. And the Puranas provide us with various concepts or understandings of the various manifestations of the universe in different yugas and the possibilities that have existed. This is why it's also called as Sambhava. All various possibilities are there. Then the next type of shastra is called as Itihasa or historical shastras. Again, this is not mythology. This is history. You can accept it or you cannot accept it. The choice is yours. But the reality is, it is held to be as historical texts. And historical to the sense that not only does it serve to document aspects of society over various time periods, but it also shows how the teachings of the Vedas, the teachings of the Smriti is applied in day-to-day life. Through the Ramayana, we see the ideals of living a life of Dharma through Sri Rama. And through the Mahabharata, we see the world as it is, with all of the problems and defects and faults of the human beings. So, Itihasa. Then, another category of Shastra is called the Sutras. So, very famously, there are the Brahma Sutras written by Sri Vedvyasji. And these are very brief statements, aphorisms. The sutras, the Brahma Sutras, take the teachings of the Vedas, specifically the Upanishads, and gives it, elaborates upon those teachings. Then, after the sutras, there is a subcategory called as Bhashya. Bhashya means commentary. So, very well-known commentary of Adi Shankaracharya ji on Upanishads, on the sutras, the Brahma Sutras, and the Bhagavad Gita. These three texts together form as the Prasthana Traya of Advaita Vedanta. There is Bhakti Prasthana as well, Bhakti Prasthana Traya. But we are studying Advaita. So, these three are there. And Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji has given Bhashya on all three Upanishads, Gita, and Brahma Sutras. Now, we have these three, Prasthana Traya. We've seen the lineage of our Shastra and the three Advaita Prasthana Traya. The thing about this is that even though these three are the main sources of Vedanta, they actually are not. They do not present the teaching in a very systematic manner. That is to say, the teaching is complete, but it is quite esoteric and it is not given in an explicit step-by-step way. Oh, but Gita is very systematic. I understand it perfectly. Yeah, I can say that now because I have the advantage of having the commentaries there to give meaning, to give context, to give some. If my acharyas and my gurus or the swamins, if the tradition did not tell me that the Gita deals with karma yoga in the first six chapters, and then bhakti yoga and then jnana yoga, how would I know on my own? I would not know. The tradition has given me the context. That too, even though we say karma, bhakti, and jnanam, these are very loose categories. It is not ex karma yoga is not exclusive to the first six. Bhakti yoga is not exclusive to the next six. Jnanam is not exclusive to the final six. All three can be found throughout Gita. Many times Bhagwan Shri Krishna goes back and forth. 1 minute, one verse, Shri Krishna is speaking to Karma Yoga. Next verse, Shri Krishna is giving the highest of Jnanam. Then Bhakti again. So the tradition gives us context. The gurus, the parampara, Sri Shankaracharya ji through his commentary, they give us context. So because we have all of that, it feels very systemic. It feels very systematic. But if I didn't have it, then I would have big trouble. So the teaching is complete, But this step-by-step guidance we don't get. Upanishads also are not giving step-by-step guidance. In fact, for the Upanishads, it is the expectation is that the student is already coming there with all of the foundation established. So therefore, many acharyas have written various independent works which give the same teaching of the Prasthanatraya in a very in an orderly step-by-step sort of manner. And all of these works we call as Prakarana Granthas. Many people say Prakarana Grantha means introductory text, but we should be very clear when we say introductory text, what we mean by that. We don't mean that this is, learning ABCs, though certainly that is there. These are still taking the complete knowledge of the Upanishads, the complete knowledge of the sutras, Brahma sutras, and of the Bhagavad Gita, but is being presented in a way that is more digestible for us so that we can study in a way that suits us. With some progression there. Now, of these Prakarana Granthas, the most well known is something called as Tattva Bodha. Generally speaking, when the student enters into Gurukulam, particularly this Jnana Marga, this Tattva Bodha is the first text. Very simply and beautifully presented. Sri Shankaracharya ji takes the teachings of the Upanishads and gives it, presents it to us in a way that we can very easily digest. Then, whatever wisdom has been presented in Tattva Bodha, Sri Shankaracharya ji decided, realized, now I can present the same thing in an even bigger canvas, which he calls as Viveka Chudamani. Another Prakarana Grantha, but Viveka Chudamani is Tattva Bodha magnified. So, if, for example, in Tattva Bodha, we Sri Shankaracharya ji might present a topic in one line or two lines in Viveka Chudamani, he takes time to elaborate each and every one. So now let us see this book, this title of this text, Viveka Chudamani. So first thing first, the word Viveka. So two words are there, Viveka and Chudamani. Now what is Viveka? Viveka, we know if we have studied Tattva Bodha. What is it? Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha. Viveka has three layers to it. Let's see. What are these three layers? The first thing is what it is. What is Viveka? It means the ability to discriminate. So this is called as Viveka Shakti. And everybody has it. We all have Viveka Shakti. Whether we use it or not is a different matter. Whether we use it properly or not is also a different matter, but we all have Viveka Shakti. This is simply what it is. I have the ability to engage in discriminative thinking, to think about things when presented with choices. Very naturally, we have to engage in some Viveka in order to make a decision. Sometimes it happens very quickly without much conscious awareness of what we are doing. And then sometimes we have to actively engage the mind, but it is still happening. So whether somebody asks, what route did you take today? What road did you take? Do you want coffee or tea? Do you want yogurt or ice cream? Anytime a question is posed, a choice is posed to me, the mind has to engage in some sort of deliberation. Of course, the mind can only deliberate based on whatever knowledge is available to it at that time, but the deliberation aspect is called as Viveka, specifically Viveka Shakti. Next, Viveka Kriya. What is that? So I know what Viveka is. I know that it is the ability to distinguish or discriminate between this thing A and thing B, one thing and another. The next thing is not just the ability to do it, which is a shakti, but the process by which I engage in that. This is called as the kriya. So when I engage in viveka and I apply my knowledge, I apply my mind, I apply whatever is available to this intellect as I am making a decision, as I'm making a choice, this is called as a kriya. This is called as that process, the process that is involved in discriminating. And the process requires that I have something available to pull from, to utilize, to work with. So everybody has the shakti. That is part of the intellect, is a feature of the intellect. Then that shakti has to be put into use. That kriya is there, and it can only be put into use with as long as I have something to you back it up with. So I must have some knowledge there. Then when I apply this viveka, when I start applying this type of critical thinking, then what happens very naturally, some knowledge comes out of that. Some knowledge is born from that. So viveka jnanam. So the jnanam is that knowledge that arises or is born out of this viveka, this type of critical discriminatory thinking. Now, when we say discrimination, we should be very clear. We should have no doubt as to what this word means. Because the word discrimination in our world today has taken on a sense of partiality, meaning having a very negative intonation sense. And we talk about racial discrimination or gender discrimination or all sorts of types of discrimination. Here, when we use this word discrimination, we are talking about it in a positive manner. That discerning power of the mind, that ability of the mind to engage in critical thinking and analysis. So we should not get confused about that. Therefore, we just use viveka. So this thinking is the ability to bring clarity. Viveka brings clarity of thinking. So now the next question that we should ask is, what is that viveka? What is that discrimination between what and what? So we require viveka in every context of our lives. This is not up for debate. You doubt it, but even to doubt it means that you are utilizing viveka. The very expression of a doubt means I'm thinking if I use it or I don't use it. Do I need it or do I not need it? That means viveka shakti is there. And so constantly we have to use this mind to make decisions, to make a choice. But here, in this context, it is being used with regards to discriminating between that which is sat and that which is asat. That which is true versus that which is false. That which is real versus that which is unreal. And so this is called as sat asat vivekaha. And therefore, in this text, in this work, Bhagwan Shankaracharya Ji is taking us on the journey of sat asat vivekaha. What else are we engaging in this viveka? We have to discriminate between atma and anatma, that which is real atma versus that which is unreal anatma. And tattva and atattva as well. That which is the essence of all things versus that which is atattva, lacking in essence. We'll engage in nitya, that which is eternal, versus anitya, that which is impermanent, viveka. All of these names and phrases we will hear. So this is viveka, right? So how many kinds of viveka are there? Viveka occurs in three levels. First, there is the viveka shakti, the ability that we all have to engage in this power of discriminatory thinking. Second is Viveka Kriya, the very process itself. What actually is happening as the mind is engaging in this type of thinking. And then the third is the result of that, which is the Jnanam, Viveka Jnanam. So Viveka Shakti, Viveka Kriya, and Viveka Jnanam. Now we have the second word of the text, Chudamani. Chuda means head, Shikha. The head is the top, isn't it? It's at the top of the body. So the shiras or the shikha is at the very prominent position of being at the top. That's why our brains are located here and not at the bottom of our feet. So this chuda is head. The word itself, chuda, is a feminine word, strilinga. The next word is mani. Mani means a jewel or a gem. Something that is precious, an ornament that is considered to be very precious. And so, what is the most important ornament that any one person can have? I'll give you a hint. It's not a ruby or a diamond, but it is in the power of the intellect, this Viveka Shakti. Specifically, Viveka Shakti guided by right knowledge and applied in the right way. And therefore, a person who lives their lives according to this, in this manner, that person has that viveka, which in itself is that diamond, that crest jewel. Everything else are ornaments. Everything else that we can get, they all are there because of viveka. Vedic living, Vedic life, in fact, begins with viveka. Even before coming to Vedanta, a person should lead a life of dharma. A person should seek to lead a life of karma yoga and have knowledge of what is dharma and what is adharma. Before coming to Vedanta, then one should engage in dharmic living. Vedanta can come after. One should live a virtuous life. One should engage in the virtues that are being taught via our Shruti and Puranas and Itihasa. Then finally, one finds themselves after engaging in such a life, engaging in the virtues and values of life. Now what? Now that should be firstly guided by the Karma Kanda of the Vedas. Then I realize, not because of sorrow, but because it is just the next step in my spiritual evolution, that I seek more. I seek a higher connection with that divine. The life of virtue, the life of dharma, is what takes me there. Oh, but you said, when people experience sorrow, when people have had enough of samsara, then out of sorrow and out of, these feelings, then we turn to spirituality. This is true, but it also does not discount prarabdha, one's prarabdha. That prarabdha, or actually more specifically, the samskaras of purva janmas, of previous lives, having engaged in this type of dharmic living, those samskaras must materialize at some point. So the prarabdha I have in this life might be giving me a lot of sorrow. And that is because I have not attained sufficient vairagya. So maybe in previous births, I have been engaged in study. I have been engaged in dharmic living, but I did not have vairagya. So now in one lifetime, Bhagwan says, okay, now you take blows from the world. Take it and let it give you vairagya. See, actually, we should see it as a blessing more than anything, because it becomes an opportunity now for me to detach. If something is causing you pain and sorrow in this world, why do you want to hold on to it? If you have a growth in the body, and it is cancerous, are you going to hold on to it? If the doctor tells we have to cut it out and you will be okay after, And the patient says, no, doctor, I like it. I love it. I want to keep it. Yeah, you can keep it. But you won't have very long to hold on to it. You can hold it all the way to the end. But the intelligent person understands that this thing is causing me sorrow or pain. Now, why should I hold on to it? Let me cut it out and get rid of it once and for all. This is called as vairagya. So these sorrows that I get in this life actually present me with an excellent opportunity to put my viveka into practice and to gain more and more vairagya to the world. So this person finds themselves now on the path of knowledge. And so viveka begins at the beginning of life and it goes with us to the very end of life. So Shankaracharya ji very graciously and kindly gives us an entire text to help us put viveka into practice, to understand what is right thinking as far as spirituality is concerned, and to make our lives useful and purposeful with very clear and right priorities. And with the ultimate goal of Atmajnanam in mind. So Vivekasya Churamani, the great crest jewel of Viveka. So therefore, this text is a crown jewel, the crown jewel of discrimination, the crest jewel of discrimination, as many of our translations have. In other words, it is the crowning glory or quintessence of the knowledge that is discriminating that which is real from unreal, that which is sat from asat. Now, with this background, we'll enter into this text. Now, the first thing is that we should understand Viveka Chudamani in itself is a comprehensive text. Shankaracharya ji is covering sadhana, the means, the sadhya, the goal, and also the result, the siddhi, in one text, 580 verses, give or take, depending on your under recension. And throughout the 580, all of this will be covered. Sadhana, sadhya, and siddhi. What are the means to the what? To the goal, to the sadhya. And having attained the goal, what is the result? What is the siddhi of that? In the first couple of verses, introductory shlokas, we'll see. But from 1 to 30, Shankaracharya ji is dealing with adhikari, adhikari nirupanam, the qualifications of the seeker. And beginning with what we are all very familiar with, sadhana chatushtayam. So we'll chant this first shloka and then we'll see. Can I have one person to volunteer to repeat the verse? Doesn't don't worry if you better yet if you not if you're not comfortable with the Sanskrit, because then you have an opportunity to learn. So we'll start with the invocation shloka. We'll see. Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta. One
Sarva
more time. Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta.
Siddhanto
Gocharam Tamagocharam.
Gocharam
Govindam Paramanandam
Govindam Paramanandam
Sadgurum Pranatosmyaham
Sadaguru Prasodhyam
Sadgurum Pranatosmyaham
Sadagurum Pranadosharam
Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Gocharam tamagocharam Govindam paramanandam Sadgurum pranatosmyaham. No? Please, if it's. Okay. All right. Sarva Vedant. So Bhagwan Shankaracharya Ji begins this text with the Mangalacharan or an invocation mantra, shlokam. So, in general, all texts begin with some invocation and some Mangalacharan. And the author will do namaskara, offer his gratitude and prostrations very commonly to first Ishvara, to Bhagavan. So we'll see most times some invocation of the Lord, of Bhagavan, some form of the Devata. Then another type of Mangalacharan is doing invocation to the Guru. So Shankaracharya Ji is beginning this text seeking the blessings of his Guru. Govindam Paramanandam Sadgurum Pranataha Asmi Aham Govindam. His Guru was Bhagavad Govindapada. So he's engaging in namaskara to his guru. But additionally, Govinda is also the name of Bhagwan, Sri Krishna. So here, this Govinda word is being used to signify both the guru as well as Ishvara, Bhagwan, the Lord. So it is playing a dual role. And what Shankaracharya Ji is doing in this namaskara is showing actually that he does not feel that there is any difference between Guru and Ishvara, between Guru and Govinda. And therefore, he draws a parallel between both. Aham, I, Pranataha, I offer prostrations, asmi. I offer my prostrations to whom? To that Guru, who is Parama Anandam. Who is that? Very source of ananda, bliss, and not just ordinary bliss either, Parama Ananda, supreme bliss, that bliss which is of the highest nature, Paramaha Ananda Asya, that Guru, that Sadguru. Then Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta, that Guru who is also the very I. One, he is the essence of all of the Vedas, the teachings of the Vedas, the knowledge of the Vedanta. He is the essence of it, but he is also perfected in the knowledge of the Vedas. He has perfected the knowledge of the Vedas. Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta. Then, Tam Agocharam. Tam Agocharam. The one who has gone beyond the senses, who is beyond all speech and all senses. This is not tamas. Yeah, I think in some places, not in our Chinmay Mission publication, but in some places, if you use any other source, sometimes they have this tam meaning tamas, but this is tam meaning this tam is a pronoun. Tam, that guru. Tam Sadguru. He is Agocharam, the one who has gone beyond all senses, who has gone beyond all sense organs, and all senses, actually. And he himself is the Gocharam. He is the goal. He is a goal. That guru is a goal. Why? Because Sarva Siddhanta, Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta, because he has perfected the knowledge of the Vedas, the teachings of the Vedas, which is the Vedanta. Upanishado nama Vedanta. Vedanta itself is the name of the Upanishads. And why is this important? Because we saw this Prakarana Granta is not just some ordinary text teaching some ordinary subject matter. This is a text which has taken the knowledge of the Upanishads, the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, and to some extent even the Brahma Sutras, but specifically Upanishads and Gita, and is providing to us, giving us a nice roadmap for our own study, our own sadhana. And so Shankaracharya ji begins, as we all should, with kritagnyata, with gratitude to the guru. Because without the guru, then where would my knowledge come from? Our tradition is a tradition that is steeped in gratitude to the guru. And this is something that is practical, not just with regards to spirituality. This is practical in day-to-day life also. The most advanced, the most educated amongst us still owe everything to their teachers in kindergarten. Because without A, B, C, D, E, F, G, what is there for thesis and all of these things? What research is possible if I don't have the foundations and basics of language? So the tradition reveres the guru because without the guru, at each stage of my life, I would have no knowledge, and therefore, how can I live and exist in the world, let alone succeed in anything? So if the teacher is essential to our life in the secular world, what can I say for the role of the teacher in my spiritual journey? This is why we can say, I know this, I understand this, I get it. I get it because somebody gave knowledge that provided a foundation for me to understand other things, bigger things, greater things. So we begin this text with Namaskaram to the Guru. So this shloka we will chant, we will say at the beginning of all classes. So we'll say it together now, and then we'll see more in this text next week. Actually, there'll be some time if you have some questions also. And I'll give some further guidelines on this class. Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Gocharam Tamagocharam Govindam Paramanandam Satgurum Pranatosmyaham. Okay. Now, this class. So, firstly, is from next week onwards, I'll have slides and we will study by first, we'll study word for word each pada. Then we will study the various sandhis and samasas. We will see those. And then we will also study, of course, the meaning, the philosophical meaning behind each verse, the tatparya. So, padacheda, samasa vigraha, and tatparya. I don't know Sanskrit. Then you will learn 580 verses by the end. You're guaranteed to learn. Don't worry. And if you have Sanskrit there, then perfect. Then this will not be a challenge for you. Then you can focus on you can practice what you already know and then focus on the rest of it. So that's one. Second is every fourth session. So this is first two, so three sessions from now. Every fourth session, we will have discussion groups. So we will join as a class, then I will not speak, then everyone will be, we'll split everyone up into smaller groups, and I will provide discussion questions. And in the small groups, we will discuss. The questions will be based off of what we have studied in this class so far, in this text so far, that is, right? Keep it to that. I'll provide some general rules and guidelines for discussion, but that will be there. So that is every fourth class. So if you don't attend the fourth class, then both you and your fellow students will miss out because when knowledge comes, one from the teacher, two from our own study, but thirdly, it comes from discussion. So don't think, now you'll just sit and just attend and say you joined. You actually have to study. So those of you might have our Chinmay Mission publications, Viveka Chudamani, where Pujya Gurudev's commentary, that is there. Other resources you might have as well, but just bear in mind if you are using other resources to keep it to Advaita Ashrama only. There may not be other commentaries there. Few are there, Ramanuja commentaries there, etc. But keep it to Advaita Ashrama. This is Advaita we are studying here, no other darshana. So we'll keep it to that. Right. So discussion group every fourth class. And additionally, some, not every time, but sometimes in our regular class, I might leave some time at the end for questions. If I don't, that's okay. And if you have a question or a doubt, you mark, keep it down, write it down. Sometimes doubts are answered simply by studying, by listening and studying again and again. By itself, that helps to clarify. But even so, when I have a doubt or a question, we have a tendency to want to get an immediate answer because we are all busy people and we're all in a rush. And I need my answer now. Instant gratification, right? No. When I have a doubt, I should sit with it for some time. I should mull it over in my mind for some time. Don't seek an answer immediately. And don't just not, it's not good to have somebody who always answer for us. I should keep that in my mind and keep mulling it over again and again and again, and going back to the source material, the text, the verses, etc. That's a very good thing. If through the class it is not answered, in my self-study, it might be answered. If not, when I have discussion with my peers, then it can be answered. Then sometimes over time, some doubts just get clarified over time, by loosening other doubts that might be there. When ignorance goes away, then slowly all other confusions naturally loosen up. That is not to say I will not take questions, I will. So if it is not there in the regular classes, in the fourth class, we'll have discussion for about 40 minutes or so. And the balance of time, then any other doubts, any other clarifications that might be needed, we will do in that remaining 15, 20 minutes. So, like that, the fourth session will be given to that type of that it'll be in that format. Yes. Right. Now, there was another thing. Some people had, Niraj was saying that some people wanted to have in person also. We can do that. We can do a hybrid. So, there are those who might want to come to mission to Gokul and those who will join online. We can do both. Just let me know in advance so that you can prepare the room. Okay. Yes. So we can sort that out. Maybe Niruji, you can sort out
Sure.
for next week. Yeah.
I think people in town should come. It's always good to be in person.
Yeah. Yeah. Just yeah.
Yeah, we'll have it in Gita room. Yeah.
We'll
Or
see.
in
We'll see
the,
how. Yeah.
yeah.
We can do it here also in the. We'll work it out. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So that's that, I think. Anything else? Are there any questions or anything else before we close for today? I know time is an at an end, so. Okay.
Hari Om,
Adio.
the four human defects to human is to err, propensity to cheat, we are subject to our senses. What was the fourth one?
Illusion.
Illusion. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Everybody has a text, by the way. If you have a physical text, better yet. If you don't, that's fine. But you
If
should
they
have
let
the.
me know, then I can order some, or
Yeah.
Shavan can order,
Yeah.
I think.
So we can get that. If you don't, yeah, let us know. All right. So we'll close for today and see you again next week, where we'll get into the text. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om Bole Shri Sadgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai.